Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Dawn O'Porter, and welcome back to So Lucky, where each week I go deep with my guest and explore all of the sides to all of their stories. Their highs and lows, their hopes and fears, their lucky and unlucky moments. My guest for you this week is the truly one-of-a-kind Lionel Shriver, author of We Need to Talk About Kevin, Big Brother and Property, amongst many others. Now, I am a huge fan of Lionel's writing, which is what I focus on in this chat. She's a controversial character and her journalism definitely raises an eyebrow or two. And I will admit that I don't agree with a lot of what she talks about. However, I am a huge fan of her books and that's what I chose to focus on for the sake of this interview. I also find her life fascinating. She tries to pass off herself as normal and she isn't normal. She is kind of bizarre in the way that she lives. She stays up all night and sleeps until midday and all these little quirks, which I can't get enough of. So we talk about all of that. We also talk about politeness and pushiness. We talk about the fact that she's not on social media, which I find fascinating how anybody in this modern age cannot be on social media because it's everywhere and I'm so obsessed, I don't understand how anyone isn't obsessed. We talk about her nocturnal existence, how books don't get any easier with experience, which almost made me cry. And we talk about food, including her very clear rules about popcorn, always savoury, and every single day. See? She's quirky. I was so excited to talk to Lionel, and I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. So here is me, Dawn O'Porter, talking to the extraordinary Lionel Shriver. I look at your life, a happy marriage, successful author. You live between London and Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You appear to be very solid in who you are. You have a routine, a rigorous routine. You exercise. You love to cycle. You love to play tennis. You're very healthy. Do you consider yourself to be a lucky person?
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a fiction writer, I am constantly contriving other people's lives that are so much worse than mine.
Right.
Because lucky people are not interesting to write about or read about. I mean, something horrible has to happen to them.
Yes.
And, you know, there's this, that conventional opening, either in books or in films, where it's this, you know, happy families. And the kids are cute and saying charming things.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother is rushing off to a wonderful job. And
yeah.
She obviously, you know, maybe they have sex that morning and get interrupted. That's another cliched scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know something horrible is going to happen to these
yeah.
people. So the nice thing about real life is that you can actually go through long periods of time and have no plot, right? And no plot is a mercy.
Yes.
Plot is bad. And, of course, you don't ever get out of plot in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's inevitable. Something's
yeah,
going to happen.
People die on you.
Yeah.
You die on yourself. History proceeds, sometimes tramples over your head.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, periods in which nothing particularly is happening and everything is fine, they're very precious. And in fact, I think that's the big mistake that people make when things go well, is just not to savor it. Because it does seem as if it's going to go on forever, and
yeah.
that is a complete mistake.
That's a mistake, yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, these periods are very precious. In fact, I made a note of that when you were at your book launch the other night, that you talked about how you were happily married and you love your kids and mm-hmm. you love your job. And again, I have that feeling like, oh, you'd better cling to that, because who knows what's going to happen next. You have no idea how long that's going to last.
Yeah, I'm so in tune with that as well. And so my problem is that I'm always trying to race on to the next thing. I'm not very good at sitting in the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm always wondering what's next. Is everything going to be okay? It's all going to fall apart. And I said in my little speech at my book launch that I'm just having this strange moment where everything is really nice, and of course it's not going to last, and trying to remind myself to just enjoy it. But it's hard to do that. I find that quite hard to do that, because I surround myself with a lot, and I do lots of things, and there's always, I have allowed so much opportunity for something to fuck things up for me, because I allow so much in all the time. Are you quite sparse in your life?
No, I wouldn't characterize my life as sparse. I travel a lot mm-hmm. for work, as I imagine you do. Mm. I do a lot of literary festivals, probably more than are good for me, but it still gets me out of the house.
Yeah.
And takes me interesting places.
How do you, because obviously as a writer, there's a need to publicize and be a voice out there, or at least it helps. How are you in terms of broadcasting? Are you quite confident with it all? Do you enjoy it? Do you like being on camera?
You know, I expressly don't like being on camera. It creates a physical self-consciousness that I find actively unpleasant.
Uh-huh. So do you do it very often?
Not all that often.
Right.
I get asked to do the news, like Newsnight or Channel 4, more often than I want to do it. In fact, I beg off often as not.
So why do you say yes?
I start feeling guilty for having said no.
Right.
It's utterly ludicrous.
It's a ludicrous line.
and of course, it's flattering to be asked. And I find it universally unsatisfying. I can't remember ever having walked off, especially a newscast, and being satisfied with myself and pleased with the result. And, you know, I never feel that I said what I wanted to.
Right.
Time on television goes lickety-split. You're usually competing for time with other people like Alistair Campbell,
uh-huh. Tough
who's
going.
Like a foot and a half taller than I am and is very used to not only being on TV, but taking up more than his share of the time on TV.
Yes.
And I tend to be too polite.
I don't think of you and your character that I think of you as being, I presume that you're confident to not be polite, I think is what I'm trying to say. Is
you
that an
think.
Unfair assessment of you?
I wish I were more impolite, especially in these circumstances, because it's the people who are impolite who push themselves in and get to say their piece.
Yeah.
And I tend to sit there and wait for Emily Maitlis to call on me.
Right.
And she never does.
Okay,
because so that's the nature of the animal.
And so then you kind of walk away thinking, why the hell did I just put myself
absolutely.
In that
position?
Why
did I just ruin my evening? You know,
right, yeah.
Newsnight goes out live. It starts at 10:30. Usually the slot I'm on is at the end. Mm-hmm. I don't get home till midnight. Why did I ruin our evening?
Yeah, it's a really odd thing to do again after you've had that feeling. But here we are bizarre industry.
Yeah, I think I keep hoping that this time will be different.
Yeah. Are you on any
famous last
yeah.
word?
You're not on any social media, are you?
No.
So what's that decision? Why?
I already don't have enough time in the day.
Uh-huh.
I don't need more distraction from the work that I have to get done.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also leery of putting myself out there for target practice.
That's a really good point.
I really just don't see the point of it.
Do you think you would get, trolls, which is the term?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know they're out there, and I know that they say mean things about me, but I am not on the platforms where they are being said, and therefore they never get to me.
Right.
And I find that gratifying. You know, it's perfect protection.
Yes. Are you ever inclined to Google yourself?
I have occasional need to for one thing or another, but I try to avoid it. I do not have a Google alert on my name.
You have an admirable level of self-protection in a world where everyone is obsessed with the response that they're getting.
I value my privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think there's something to be said for the old protocol whereby authors were remote.
Yes.
And you got to know them through their work. And you didn't expect that just because they were somewhere out in the world that you had a right to access to them. You know, you could always send a letter to the publisher and it would eventually get there,
mm-hmm.
maybe. In truth, publishers are so careless about this stuff that it will often take months for a traditional snail mail fan letter to get to my desk. But I always answer them. I'm always respectful of someone who's gone to that much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another kind of fan mail that now comes in by email. And as long as I'm disciplined, then I send a response through the publisher. I have not always been disciplined, and I have often regretted that.
Do you try and respond to as much as you can?
Yeah, I mean, if somebody has taken time out of their day and are following the rules to tell me, usually mm-hmm. that they liked one of my books, then the least I can do is say thank you.
Uh-huh. You write from home, do you?
Yeah.
Would you ever consider like a co-working space and being around other people? You like the solitude of it?
No, if you're picking up a pattern, it's basically to keep other people out of my life.
Yes.
See, doesn't that make you feel special?
It does. And actually, I'm gonna go on to me and my relationship with you because, I mean, I knew of your writing obviously before I knew you, but little did I know that you lived on my street at this time, that I had just read We Need to Talk About Kevin, and it consumed my life for a good 6 months of being able to think about nothing but. It was honestly one of my favorite books of all time.
Well, that makes me feel guilty.
No, in all the right ways. It was, you know, this is before I'd started writing fiction myself. It got me as a story, it got me all that stuff, but I was like, God, if I could ever grip a reader in the way that that book gripped me, I mean, you know exactly what that book does to people. It was fantastic. And then I discovered that you live on my street. And so then my life became about how do I make friends with Lionel Shriver? How am I going to get to this woman? Quite scared of you, I think I was, because you're mysterious and I would try to research you. And it's like, you know, that you are very self-protected and you have, it's so unusual, I find, to discover someone who doesn't want to be like out there and mega famous and on Twitter and trying to like get attention for their writing all the time. You just were so cool, which is exact opposite to how I am.
Considering what a nerd I was in primary school, that's a compliment that's been long in coming.
Well, Lionel, coolness changes, doesn't it?
As
you get
does.
Older, it becomes something different. Now, to me, you are very, very cool. When I was at school, that wasn't what cool was, but now it is. Anyway, so my long story short, my cat went missing and turned up on your doorstep when I was on my honeymoon, and I had an excuse to talk to you.
That's right.
Yes.
And though my husband would contest that version of
okay.
events.
Okay, well, you tell me what really happened.
No, whenever you come up, he reminds me that he rescued your cat. He found your cat. It had gone missing.
Yes.
And he believes that he has special communication powers with animals. I'll just leave that neutral.
Yeah, we'll just let that hang.
Right. And yes, he rescued your cat.
So there's a different story. The thing is, that's great. And I kind of want to know exactly what happened. But the other thing is, I love telling the story that my cat turned up on Lionel Shriver's doorstep. So I kind of don't want you to shatter that for me.
I just shattered it.
You did, and I'm ignoring you. Anyway, it was a wonderful thing to meet you because I admire you very much. And since then, you've come to
two. Well, you're not too shabby yourself.
Thank you, my love. And then you've come to two of my book launches, which I was really flattered by because you turned up. And there was a diarist at my last one, and they all just want the kind of TV presenters and all that. And the only thing that they picked out was the fact that you'd come and there was a picture of me and you in this paper. And I felt really cool that day. So I thank you for coming and allowing that photo to happen.
I
was very proud
of them.
Thank you very much. So your daily routine is you wake up late, is that correct?
Very.
What kind of time?
Oh, I'm tempted to lie.
Don't lie. This is a safe space.
No, it isn't. we've been getting up at 11. I'm sorry.
No, it just sounds
heavenly. Now, that sounds awfully indulgent, but we generally don't get to bed to sleep anyway until 4.
You go to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
What are you doing until 4 o'clock in the morning?
Nothing very interesting.
Is that when you write?
We don't eat, no. Again, not that interesting. It's just we don't eat till midnight, sometimes 12:30.
Do you watch television? What's on at that time?
Newsnight. Yeah, Newsnight's on series record. And no, we have a normal schedule. It's just everything is later.
How lovely that you're both the same.
Well, my husband doesn't have much of a choice.
Right.
I'm afraid I probably set the schedule, and he tends to complain. But the truth is, he's a jazz musician. He's a drummer. And when he does have gigs, 4 a.m. is nothing.
Right.
I mean, there have been so-called evenings when he didn't come home until 11 in the morning.
Right.
So I think he would tend, left to his own devices, to keep in a more erratic schedule. Yeah. I'm very rigid.
Right.
And therefore, I keep the same schedule. It's just a few hours later than everyone else's.
Got it. Are you good at relaxing?
No.
So what happens when you try to relax?
Well, eventually I fall asleep.
Like a holiday.
I don't want to sound like some workaholic drear. I don't think I work all that hard, and I watch plenty of TV.
Mm-hmm.
Happily.
Mm-hmm.
I like reading. I play lots of tennis in the summer. I was going to say that's relaxing, but it isn't when I'm losing.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've got a pretty balanced life. I know that sounds boring, but it's got some variety in it. I mean, that's the thing. You try to portray me as someone who kind of stays home, a little gnome, and is very private. But I have another side. I have a very public life. I may not like being on the news, especially, but I love doing public events.
Yeah,
I love them, and I love live audiences. And that's been a side of myself that I've only been able to explore, obviously, in my more successful incarnation. But it's turned out to be dead fun, and therefore gives me the opportunity to be more theatrical,
right.
To communicate very directly with people, to play with humor, to be sometimes more political. It's been great, and then, you know, Q&A is my favorite part.
Yeah, so you love interacting with your readers.
Yeah, I really do.
It's nothing better, is there? Especially when they're asking questions and they come from the heart on something that you've written, and it's like, oh, it just feels so good, doesn't it? That
yeah, but I like it in person, not on Twitter.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So when you just said that I'm kind of describing you as a little gnome who hides away, as you just said. If that comes across at all insulting, by the way, that I kind of, if I veer my questions in that, no. I think
it just wasn't wholly accurate.
No, and it's not, and I'm glad to hear it's not. But also, I think I'm so floored by the fact that with someone who isn't on social media, I think, what does someone do with their time when they're not constantly checking Twitter? Because I'm sitting here now and there's a part of me that wants to just be like, can I just see if anyone's retweeted that last thing that I said? I'm so addicted to it. It's such a terrible, I mean, it's a wonderful thing in my life, and I adore it. And I love the communication with people, and I get a real thrill from it. But if I was to let it go, the time, the airspace, the brain space, the family space, the love space, everything would just be, I would just have so much more space. And so I see you as this kind of mysterious creature that doesn't do that and therefore has all this time to do your own thing. And I'm just like, what does someone do with all that time? It's such a mystery to me.
Well, most of it probably goes into reading magazines and newspapers.
Right, what magazines do you read?
Well, I always read The Spectator. I try to keep up with Standpoint. I subscribe to Which.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
So tell me about when that first nugget of an idea starts to cultivate inside of you for a novel. What do you do? Do you write that down in a notebook and then keep a notebook for each book and add to it? Do you put post-it notes on the walls? Like, how do you build an idea into a book?
Well, it starts in my head. I might mention an idea in my personal journal. Eventually, I will establish a file on the computer. In the olden days, I would have kept a notebook, a handwritten notebook for notes, and now I would tend to keep them digitally. It starts out very loose, and I'll just write down any ideas I've got. I've got a rough outline of the new one ready to go, but that really, it's interesting how little that really does for you if you haven't started the book.
Yeah.
It gives you an illusion of knowing what you're doing and an illusion of having already come some way in the project, whereas it's only when you've started the first page of the novel proper that you have anything.
Uh-huh.
And whenever you do that, you realize, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This feels so fake and unpersuasive, and I have all these grand plans and I don't know how to achieve them.
Right.
And it's also a reminder of, oh, you know, for example, I've got a whole outline, but I haven't decided what country it takes place.
Right, okay.
It's like, oh, I guess there are a few more decisions to be made.
And are you quite good at abandoning that whole thing? So once you start just letting the journey take you and seeing where it goes, or do you need
a
plan?
I'm not generally that kind of writer.
Right.
I have occasionally changed my mind about something that happens, so I try not to be as rigid as I am in my personal life. But I do tend to hew to the overall intention of the book.
Right. And is the writing process for you, I guess I'm asking for a glimmer of hope for my own future, the more books that you write, does it get easier?
Confound it, it does not. Now that's me complaining.
Right. Okay, there she is.
Right. I am befuddled why it doesn't get easier.
Okay, yeah.
And if anything, I would say that
it,
I have experienced the processes having got harder. Or maybe to be more accurate, every book is different. And some books are harder going than others. I mean, my last novel, especially once it passed a certain crucial point and I'd done all the research for it, it had that miraculous sense of writing itself, an experience I hadn't had for years.
Oh, what a lovely feeling.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And there was a little period of time that my husband was gone, as he often is. And I just let myself keep whatever schedule I wanted. And I was staying up till midnight writing. As I emailed a colleague of mine, I feel like a real writer. It was really, really fun.
Oh, a lovely
just
feeling.
Just getting so excited about what I was writing that I didn't want to stop. And that's the way everyone wants to imagine it is. That's very rarely the case.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite a relief. And I don't expect that necessarily to repeat anytime soon.
Right, okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm going to ask you the question that is the most annoying question that I ever get asked, and I really wish that people didn't ask me, because I think people only ask this to female authors.
Okay, so you inflict on others, yes, but what I want has to, been inflicted on,
yes,
you.
Yes, you'll have been asked this 1,000 times, mm-hmm, and that's why it's annoying. But I wasn't going to ask you this, so I just actually want to know, and so now I'm going to stop complaining when people ask me. How much of you is in your novels?
Well, of course, there's a way in which my novels are all me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to craft characters that are identical to myself. That would be boring and, interestingly, probably impossible as well, because the whole idea of a fictional character is a kind of abstraction or extraction, and it wouldn't be me even if I tried to make it me.
Right.
In fact, I experimented with this in my last novel, The Mandibles. There is a character in that book called Nolly, or her given name is Enola, and Nolly is a shorthand. But what nobody seems to have picked up in any of the reviews is that Nolly is an anagram of Lionel.
There it is.
Right?
Yeah.
And she's, at this point in history, she's like 70 years old, but this is a near future, mm-hmm, novel. So it's looking at me, what age I'm going to be in 2029, and then on to 2047. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make her utterly unbearable. You know, she's opinionated, uh-huh, she's inconsiderate, she's constantly foisting her views on others. She puts immoderate quantities of chilies on her meal, regardless of what she served.
Yeah.
And I tried to portray her as obnoxious. And she exercises every day, but by the time, by the time she's 70, the exercise is kind of farcical.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, give me a break.
Yeah.
With the, you know, pounding star jumps on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
But funnily enough, she ended up becoming one of my favorite characters.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe that means I have a healthy relationship to self after all.
You've never shied away from, I would say, almost say you're the kind of the master of unlikable female characters, which I think...
Yeah, but I like them.
Oh, I absolutely. And I love reading them. It's like, it's just, you know, this idea that women are always nice and sweet, and the fact that that became a trend in fiction was just rubbish. And the fact that a lot of female writers, I think, are nervous to write unlikable female characters because they just want their reader to like them, to like the character. And I...
Also, there's a pat thing of the strong,
yeah,
female character, which it's just another cliche.
It is, but you still do have to make your reader be on board with that female character, or at least have empathy for some understanding.
To be fair, I'm not entirely nice to the men either.
No, that's true, but I'm just...
In fact, I've been accused of creating really wussy men.
God, I get that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get, you know, I'd say the men in our books are very different, but I, in The Cows, so I had this character of Jason, who essentially was not a drip, he was lovely. All he wanted was love and babies. And men have interviewed me and been like, he just kind of had this pathetic man. I'm like, hang on a minute, that's how women have been betrayed in everything for always. But suddenly we put these kind of very nice attributes to a man and you consider him to be pathetic and wussy. It's just, mm-hmm, like, all right, we're not prepared for men to just want love and babies. And it's interesting how kind of defensive men get when they're not portrayed as alpha men in books and movies.
Yeah, well, I think that I've been prone to describing relationships where the woman is dominant.
Right.
And there's probably a trying to fight back.
Yeah.
It's not that conscious. It's more I look back and I think, oh,
oops,
I did it again.
Does your husband ever read your books and wonder which guy he is? Because that's what my husband always says. He opened So Lucky and I was like, oh God, which one of these guys am I going to be? Does he ever Actually, that's a good question. I've asked you this before as well. Does anyone in your life ever see themselves in your characters and become upset about that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Can you go into any detail about that, or is that going to just piss them off some more?
Well, the book in which I clearly drew on personal experience, while of course still trying to create separate mm-hmm. characters and tell a separate story, is The Post-Birthday World.
Right.
And the structure of that book is it's a parallel universe, and it's a woman who is either happy or thinks she's happy uh-huh. with a partner that she's been with for 9 years, and is suddenly tempted to kiss a friend of the family, and the book splits into two universes, so that on the one side of the book she stays with her partner and mm-hmm. is very faithful, and her life goes one way, and in the side of the book where she gave into temptation and kissed this famous snooker player,
right,
she ends up marrying him and has a very different life. So it's yes. looking at that. Well, it was trying to capitalize on whatever I had learned or failed to learn in leaving my last partner and
right.
marrying my husband. And I honestly think that there was an element of taking the drumstick and extending it into a snooker cue.
Got it.
All right. So there was no way that those two men were not going to recognize each other up to a point. And my husband was very understanding, almost unnaturally so. Didn't take anything personally. It's like, what are you on drugs?
Why aren't you annoyed?
My previous partner was offended.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I was sorry about that.
Right, because that's a question in terms of, I asked you about that once, about how you, I had a situation where someone had, you know, accused me of writing about them. And you said a really brilliant line to me, which I quote you on all the time. You don't even know that you did this properly, but you said on an email to me, I don't know how it's possible to plagiarize somebody's life when everything is played out. And I really took that on board, because I think, where else is a writer or anyone going to get, you know, inspiration from them, their own experience and the things that they've witnessed. And therefore you have the right to, you know, fictionalize any part of your life and any kind of story, if that's what you want to do. And, but you've got to be quite hard, I guess, when you do that, especially when it's involving people that you love. You were just lucky that the right man there was happy with it.
yeah, well, that's true. I think that what's going to upset or offend people is very difficult to predict.
Yes.
My parents got completely outraged by my fifth novel, A Perfectly Good Family.
Right, why?
And I had anticipated that it would rub them the wrong way a little bit, not to the extent that it did. I didn't anticipate that at all. But what was interesting is that at least the things they cited in the novel that outraged them weren't nearly what I expected.
God, isn't that strange?
The aspects of the paragraphs that I expected for them to find just really close to the bone, because they were too true.
Right.
They never mentioned those sections.
The first thing that came to my mind there is that they didn't want to mention them because they were too close to the bone.
I think so.
yeah. So they picked slightly less obvious ones.
I think that what probably most offended him was indeed the passages that I'm thinking of.
Right.
But they were so uncomfortable with those passages.
Right, so they chose
couldn't take them on,
mention.
And they displaced their displeasure mm-hmm. onto aspects of the book that seemed safer.
Yeah.
But if you're going to avail yourself of your experience, and what else is there? I mean, just that's it.
That's it. That's all you've got, really.
It's all there yeah. is in your head
exactly.
is your life and the people you've met. And you can mix it up and you can disguise it, but you're still going to be disguising it with other things that you have encountered, maybe from the newspaper or
yeah.
from a next-door neighbor.
Yes.
but if you're going to use the stuff of your life, then you're probably going to injure some people. And I don't know how you get away from them.
No, it's kind of inevitable. I upset someone who was completely not involved in the actual the family.
Oh, yes.
Was fine.
Oh, yes.
I was
there,
like, oh, okay.
There are people who will project themselves into your book and you didn't intend that in the slightest.
And that's, so that came as a big surprise. I don't know why, but I feel like it's got nothing to do with what I thought I was going to talk to you about. I'm just impelled to ask you what kind of food you like and if you like to cook.
Yeah, I cook a lot. We usually have dinner at home. Hardly ever eat out, just the two of us.
And what's that scenario? Is it a TV dinner or is it a face-to-face talk?
Oh, it's a household rule. In fact, one of the things that I changed between those two partners was we used to eat in front of the TV.
Right.
And I decided that was evil.
Yeah, it's a very easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
And my husband and I never do that. I take that back. Once every 3 or 4 years, something will happen. There'll be a debate on TV and, an electoral debate. That we decide to watch together. And it actually has a sort of festive, picnic-y feeling because we never do that.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, we have candlelit dinners. And they're, my forte in cooking is putting together something edible and with a little bit of pizzazz in a very short period of time.
Okay, so what kind of thing?
Tonight will be like 5 minutes because I've discovered this stuff called Avar. It's Turkish. It's mushed up red pepper paste and
delicious.
Eggplant, and it's very pretty.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be doctored very much. You need to add a little chopped cilantro and maybe a squeeze of lemon.
That's coriander.
And a lot
UK
of chilies.
Right.
But it goes great with sea bass, and that's what we'll have tonight. That's a good example.
That sounds absolutely
delicious.
It will
be just totally knocked together. We usually have a whole grain. We eat a lot of brown rice, and it's not because I hate myself. It's because I actually like brown rice.
Yeah, me too. I would always choose brown rice over white rice.
It's just got more flavor and more texture.
Yeah. I love you. I'm instantly defensive on.
And we start the evening every night with a bowl of popcorn.
This is information I need.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of popcorn? Salty or sweet?
If you read my books and keep an eye out, you will notice that popcorn pops up, if you will, with alarming frequency.
I feel like this is going to be the new challenge, is to find all the references.
In fact, in my new one, which comes out this spring, The Motion of the Body Through Space, I put in one reference to popcorn. And this time, although it came instinctively, I noticed myself doing it and kept it in there. I thought, great, we managed to get popcorn into another book. And I figured that from now on, I may just do it on purpose in the same way that John Irving puts bears in all his books.
Yes. Right, okay, I've obviously got a few questions about the popcorn. So do you pop it yourself?
Yes.
Is it salty or sweet?
It's always savory.
So savory is not just salty?
We usually have some, it always has some salt on it.
But so there's different flavors?
This is one of my problems.
Right.
Right. We're going to get into therapy now.
Okay. I'm ready for it.
I'm a little obsessive as a character, but I often am obsessive about really small, stupid things. For example, I have a ludicrously large collection of dish towels, which we use mostly for napkins.
Right.
And
that's
I like
idea.
All the different colors and mixing them up, and I can't have enough. I mean, and if you put me in a shop and there's a row of dish towels, I would go nuts looking for new ones and new color combinations. This is sad, okay?
No, I think that's
very
special.
But the other thing that I'm completely obsessive about is popcorn seasoning. And I have an orchestral selection.
What's your favorite? Do you like truffle?
I haven't tried truffle, though I do use portobello mushroom powder and blue cheese powder.
Oh, God, you really go for it.
That makes a good combination.
This is just such an insight, Lionel.
And I discovered a company in the U.S. that does a wonderful cheeseburger flavor.
What?
Yeah, cheeseburger and Chicago Steakhouse are a couple of their... Oh, and loaded baked potato and... beer can chicken.
Oh, this is fantastic.
It's so, a little bit like the UK and those flavors of crisps.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you asked for one of my favorites is, it's one that I make myself. It uses a dry Thai chili concoction that I throw in the coffee grinder with dried shrimp. And mutilate it into a little powder and then put it on popcorn with cheddar cheese powder. That
oh my
is
goodness.
The best.
That sounds incredible. So one, I've got one more question about popcorn. This is
you got me started.
I'm
going to keep talking. I could tell you many more flavors.
I wish that we'd got onto this 20 minutes ago.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
had a good 20 minutes to talk about. My last question on popcorn is, so you have a bowl every night. What do you mean you start the night with a bowl of popcorn? So what's this ritual?
If we're in London, mm-hmm. it means sitting down to Newsnight because it's on series record.
Yeah.
So we watch it when we want. It's usually a little later than 10:30. It's usually more like 11.
Right.
And I make popcorn and we have a sherry with that.
I just think you're so brilliant. You're just...
It's a good life. I mean, especially since it also marks the point at which exercise is over, which I consider odious.
Right.
And the best part of exercise is that you have done it.
And then you get to eat.
There's nothing good about doing
it. Yeah, that's awful.
So popcorn hour, which my previous partner and I used to call indulgence hour,
right,
which lasts a lot longer than an hour, that's the highlight of the day. That and getting into bed.
So it's 11 o'clock, popcorn hour starts, and then you eat dinner at around midnight.
Yeah.
I never expected to get such detail and such an insight into you at home. I have a visual. I have a sense of smell and taste of all these different amazing popcorn toppings. I'm going to go and investigate my own. I'm going to come up with my own. Then I'm going to send them to you.
I look forward to it. I am always open to new ideas.
Okay, God, what a challenge. Lionel, is there anyone that you look at out there in the world that you consider to be very lucky?
I used to be very envious of journalists, right, especially foreign correspondents. I envy them their bravery and their adventurism and their exposure to all this interesting material.
Mm-hmm.
That has become a much more passive envy in recent times because I want to stay home and eat my popcorn. And I don't want to be in a war zone. But I'm still impressed by them. You know, someone like Lindsay Hilsum.
Mm-hmm.
She has an incredible life. She's very smart. She's very hardworking. She meets all these different people. I think that's a really interesting alternative life.
Uh-huh.
If we're going to go for parallel universes, I think being a foreign correspondent would be great.
I can see it. Thank you very much for being on So Lucky.
Well, thank you for having me.
A huge thanks to Lionel for talking to me on the podcast. Lionel's latest book, Property, is out now in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And her next book, The Motion of the Body Through Space, will be out in 2020. I have even more brilliant guests lined up for you on upcoming episodes of So Lucky. So please do make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on your smart speaker of choice to get each one as it drops. If you enjoyed this conversation, I'd be very grateful if you left a review on whatever platform you're using because that helps more people find the podcast. And if you just can't get enough of me, my own book, also called So Lucky, is out now in print, ebook, and audiobook. Thanks again to Lionel, to producer Emma Corsham at Rethink Audio, to Fanula, to Liz, to Kim, and all the team at HarperCollins, and to you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.